Where are we?
122.
122? Even severed, straying from their timeless source, even deformed, obscure, accursed, and fallen, since even fall has its perverted joy, and nothing she leaves out that serves delight. These two can to the peaks revert, or here cut out the sentence of the spirit's fall. This is the power of the life energy. Some of it sometimes is cut, like we have the vital force, vital energy, which has forgotten that it is part of a divine play, or the divine energy. So it's severed. In us also there is a kind of forgetting. This, we have lost connection with the origin from which all these forces have come. From their timeless source, from the eternal, from which all things have really been projected. And so in the play of this energy, there are all kinds of perversities, all kinds of expressions which are not perfect, even deformed, obscure, accursed, because they carry the burden of their consequence. If there is darkness, there will naturally be a certain price of pain. That is a curse in that sense. It is not that they have been given a curse, but we carry within us the weight of our actions to a large extent. And if we are disconnected with the source from which all our energies come, which we often are, the source is the divine, and we have lost contact with that, then that will have its necessary consequence. But even there, since the manifestation is delight, the play of this energy is ananda. Since nothing she leaves out that serves delight. Because the whole play of life is a projection of the delight of experience. And that is how life is described. She is the daughter of delight. All experiences she wants to try out. So that nothing she leaves out that serves delight. These two can to the peaks revert. Through all these experiences, we can go back to the origin from which all has come. The origin is the Divine Mother. She is the creative energy. She has projected out of herself like so many rivers that are flowing from the peaks. They are flowing in all directions. Sometimes the rivers bring with them the mud, the dirt, and the silt of the mountainside. Sometimes the water is absolutely pure. In the same way, the life force is, if it's purely on the vital plane, it has often taken joy in being a life force. It has forgotten that it is not, cannot exist by itself. It is a projection of and an instrument of a greater origin. But these are all cosmic forces. These life energies are universal forces. They play on all the planes. So on the lower planes, you can call them gods. They are like gods. So they can return to the origin from which they have come down and recover their forfeited divinity. Forfeited. Who's come? Come here. Oh, you have a book?
Yes, I have it in this.
To forfeit is to lose the right to something. It is not that we have lost. We have lost the right to claim something. If I say I am the divine's child, and I still carry on the way I am, have very little connection with the divine in my daily existence. I live for my ego and my satisfaction. And yet, I cannot exist without the divine. I have, in a way, lost the right to claim that I am the mother's child. I will always be the mother's child, but I cannot claim the right. This is how we live. We claim certain things, though we don't live up to it consciously. So these gods, they can turn into, you might say, Danavas, some kind of beings. They are, I wouldn't say they are Rakshasas, but they are dark forces. They take fun in hurting, in harming. It's a play because they are not very highly conscious, like little children sometimes. They enjoy playing, and in the play, if they throw mud at somebody, if they hit a stone at somebody, they break out in laughter because they don't realize that awareness is not there, the consequence of their action. At that stage, on the vital level, this sense of consequence is not yet there. But they can return to the peaks from which they have all descended, like all have descended from that peak. So he sees both sides of the world of life. All this has come within the vision of Ashwapati. The side of greatness, of power, of glory, and the side of perversity, the side of darkness, both aspects of the world of life. Life can take us away from the divine, so that those who are really thinkers or seers or sages say, better stay out of this game because you might lose your way. But that impoverishes us. We cannot stay out of the game because the game has been prepared by the Supreme. So to come back to a very straight and narrow and rigid, you might say, ascetic path is not the path that Sri Aurobindo has given us, or Mother has given us. But what is important is to stay connected with the origin, no matter what happens. That is our answer. If we forget that, then we go astray. If we stay connected, however far we may go, we are pulled back. The grace will be there. The help is there. It's always there. So at once caught in an eternal vision sweep, this is his vision. He sees the play of the eternal in all things. It's like a huge universe, because each is a world. The physical material world is a universe. Above it is a vital world, which is a universe. Above that is a mental world, which is also a universe. This world after world after world, it's like a play of so many worlds, one above the other. So his eyes, his vision goes higher and higher. He saw her pride and splendor of high-born zones. He sees the greatness, because the vital world is the world of power. And power can be at a certain stage rather risky, because it is where the ego becomes most predominant. The more power you have, the more pride you have, the more pride you have, the more self-love, you think you're special, you think you're different. And that is where you find also, if you read some of the legends, that these gods have enormous egos. They have powers, but they have egos. They have demands. They are jealous of one another. They fight with each other. This sense of wanting to be dominant. He saw her pride and splendor. Of course, all the multiplicity is there, opening out in the field of life. So it's a splendid game. The more complex and splendid it is, the more the possibility also of getting hurt, but also the possibility of realizing things that are remarkable. Those who have capacities, they reach high levels of achievement. Simultaneously, they may acquire also an enormous sense of being very, very special, very high. Power is a very difficult experience to handle. And her regions, crouching in the nether deeps. On the one hand, the sense of glory, the sense of power, the sense of splendor, which man is capable of. Man is not just a small, mediocre creature. Man can become much more than man in splendid moments. A man can become a hero. A man can overcome himself, do things that are absolutely unbelievable, rise above his weaknesses, because he is dedicated to something of a much higher and nobler level. So it is true, greatness is part of the world of life. We can rise above ourselves, even though it might carry with it the sense of pride. There is also a sense of magnificence in that. But he sees the other side, the lower side, where there is the darkness, the hidden perversity, the passions, the, you might say, the lower vital, because that is why the vital world is a very mixed world. There is the higher vital and there is the lower vital. In the higher vital, you have all the possibilities of, you know, self-giving, generosity, nobility, courage. In the lower vital, you have lust, passion, and desire. The problem is always desire that drags us down. Both belong to the world of the vital. And at a certain level, there is no life without desire. Desire is the starting point of life. At some point, earth desires. It is a push, it is a drive. When our desire drives us towards something, then you move towards it. But that desire can give us a sense of personal satisfaction. I don't remember that the desire is not mine, it is coming from somewhere else. That energy has come from somewhere else. No, I forget. I forget, I think the desire is mine. I am the author of my action. I am the one who is driving me towards my own fulfillment. And that is where the problem really begins. And her regions, crouching in the nether deeps. Above was a monarchy of unfallen self. Above this world of life is the beginning of the world of mind, of consciousness. There, this is unfallen self. The consciousness is the self, the presence of the divine, which has not been dragged down. So there is a kind of a hierarchy in the world of these invisible forces. The entire play is, he's traveling in this book too, The Traveler of the Worlds, is moving from level to level. On each level there are different powers. These powers are replaced, are controlled by even greater powers until you reach that state which is above manifestation, Satchitananda. So above was a monarchy of unfallen self. Beneath was the gloomy trance of the abyss, the lowest inconscience. The interesting thing is, it's part of the same circle. The circle that takes us higher, and that same circle swoops down and makes us plunge into the darkness. In a sense, sometimes you have to keep on going down, down. You touch rock bottom, and then from below, there is a sense of something that revolts against the darkness, and the urge to climb up starts. You rise higher and higher, the sense of pride, conceit, greatness fills you, and you fall. The ego becomes massive, you fall. You fall, you are hurt, you lose connection with your inmost spirit, your psychic being. There is no psychic play in this world. An opposite pole or dim antipodes. We had read this last time, isn't it? So these are the two opposites, the highest and the lowest. They are part of the same curve. You know the, remember antipodes, no? Same curve. There were vast of the glory of life's absolutes. All laughed in a safe immortality. Because that is the aim of life, immortality. The opposite of life is death. Man relates to death, but man dreams of immortality. Something in the world of life is never satisfied with until it reaches endless manifestation, not decay, not dissolution, not death. That is the dream of life. So this is what he also says in that poem, the mystic miracle daughter of delight, life thou ecstasy, let the radius of thy flight be eternity. At present the radius of the flight of life is temporal. As if you are allotted a certain short period of time and space in which you play with the energies given to you. Can this not be an expression of the divine from which that energy has come? Because life is the daughter of the divine, life force. There were vasts of the glory of life's absolutes. The absolutes, joy, love, beauty, power, all the things that really we search for, we seek for in the field of life, which gives us a sense of fulfillment, a sense of arriving at a certain realization. I have covered whatever I was to do. I have arrived at a certain fullness. That is the absolute. Nothing is left undone. This is what deep down inside we are hankering for. And this is what we always lack. The sense that it is not quite perfect. I have a wonderful life, I have a beautiful life. Something in me is still lacking that central connection with eternity, with infinity, with the divine, with the absolute. If I have it all the time, then perhaps I would not be me. Otherwise I may touch it. Man can from time to time have this experience. Here and there, now and then, there are moments of magnificence, of almost perfection. Why are they moments? Why is it not stable? Because we do not know how to stand outside our ego. The ego holds us up. And that is where we fail. Whereas all the beings laughed in a safe immortality on that higher plane, and an eternal childhood of the soul. That is the whole childhood. He often brings the notion of the childhood of the soul means where there is still no formation of the ego. The child is simple, is innocent, has a purity, and that is why it is beautiful. The world of life is beautiful where it is pure, innocent, free of passion, free of desire, free of holding on to the sense of self-importance. This comes, and that is the whole problem. With evolution, there is a gradual progression from matter to life. Life is an energy. The moment that energy realizes it is capable of doing much, the mind has come. The mind tells you, do this, it will lead you to this success. Do that, you will be able to achieve something. That sense of simplicity, of naturalness, is lost. A tree, for instance, grows magnificently. It is not proud of becoming a tree out of a seed. It just grows naturally. It's always beautiful. It's magnificent. If I grow magnificently, I have a sense of glory, of power. I want to be admired. I feel I should be looked up to. That spoils the whole thing. Whereas a tree is much more beautiful, but it doesn't talk to itself and say, I am so beautiful. And just a tree is a tree. It just grows naturally towards the sun without hesitation. The source of all light, the source of energy, it grows. That is the safe immortality. A tree will fall. Eventually it will die. But it will become the starting point of another tree. It's a cycle. So that sense of death, of destruction, does not haunt the tree as it may haunt man. Man wants to cling to him, his present state. He wants to prolong his life. But if my life gets more and more dim, more and more weak, why should I need to prolong it as it is? Why can I not renew this energy? Why cannot I make it continuously a play of the energy of something that is an outburst of joy, of beauty, of divinity? Why do we weaken with time? We weaken because we lose that sense from within, that certitude that I am not the child of mortality. We have not that contact. We think we are mortals. If I can always remain in this certitude, no matter what I am the child of immortality, of the divine, of the perfect. Whatever I am the child of the divine. That sense of mortality will not haunt me. But I have forgotten that. I live in the moment, in the present. Today I have much less energy than I had before. Today I am weaker, I cannot do this, I am incapable of that. And I make a whole list of all my incapacities and not realize sometimes that it is a blessing. That I can sit quietly much more than I could before. That I can travel deep within myself, which I did not when I was younger, which I traveled all around the world outside. Going here, going there, doing this, doing that. There is a kind of inner journey that I can do much better quietly. Instead of mourning and grieving that I don't have that kind of energy. There is always a compensation. Life gives us that compensation. When she takes away with one hand, she gives with the other hand. We always have something. Before darkness came, and pain and grief were born, where all could dare to be themselves. And one, that is the whole thing. All can dare to be themselves and one, that unity in the diversity. This is the original play of the supramental manifestation, where there is the projection of that supreme conscious force, Sat Chit Ananda, where there is each one has his own reality, and yet each is part of the one reality. The unity in the diversity, where matter in the life of the body is an expression of the spirit. That is the safe immortality. Only when matter becomes an expression of the spirit, there is no mortality. Until then, matter is not immortal. It has no connection with the Supreme Consciousness. Matter is closed in matter. Life is cut off from the origin. But if we have that sense of the Supreme Sat, Chit Shakti, Shakti is life. That conscious force, if that is there, the safe immortality is there. The Shakti is eternal, permanent. And an eternal childhood of the soul, because the ego is absent. And darkness is not there. Before darkness came, and pain and grief were lost, were born, where all could dare to be themselves, there is an individual, each is an individual, each is a projection of the Supreme, each one is distinct from the other. There is no uniformity, there is no sameness, and yet each is part of the all at the same time. And wisdom played in sinless innocence, with naked freedom, includes happy sun. The sense of sinlessness. He says, he gives you the image of the Christian image of sin. What really is sin? Sense of being cut off from the origin. The day you realize you are not part of the origin, you have a sense of your own weakness. And you want to hide that weakness in all kinds of different disguises. So you get the image of Adam and Eve and the fig leaf they have to wear because they feel that they are naked. Yes, it is afraid. They are afraid to be naked. Man is afraid to be bare, bare of himself. We have covered ourselves with so many layers of explanations. So many layers of different, you might say, justifications. Innocence is without all that. Simple. Mother says, be simple. That is the lesson she gives to Champaklal. He asks, tell me what I should be. She says, be simple. Be happy. But to be simple, to be without any veils, any coverings, any justifications, any kind of reasoning, just to be an expression of the Divine as He intended you to be. He made me, He intended me to be this way. And I allow Him to work through me without me making any claims. That is the difficult part. The more I am evolved, the more I can do it. The less I am evolved, the less I do it. Sin comes with the mind. Virtue and sin. It is, Mother calls it a prison. For a while, at a certain stage of human nature, that unconscious animal behavior was perhaps helped by certain strict codes of conduct. You ought to do this, this is right, that is wrong. And we believe this. So it gives a certain support to the small growing consciousness that is emerging out of the vital being. But to be stuck at that level stops us from going further. At a stage where we do not need these anymore. It's like the river that has lost itself into the sea. For a long time, the river has a path. It follows its own path. Each of us has a path. Each of us follows that path. You fall into the ocean, you are one with the ocean. You're still the river has lost itself in the ocean. It doesn't call itself a river anymore. I'm not a river, I'm that. I don't exist. That sense of division, it is a terrible sense of division. Mind controlling life, because your notion of mind will tell you this is right, do this, don't do this. And all that is part not only of your own nature, building up your character, it is also part of the fact that there is a tradition, you're living in a group, in a society, and the society has its own laws and says if you do this, what will people believe? What will they think? It gives to that social nature a certain sense of a formation. And you can be comfortable in that particular level of society. That is one reason why there was the attempt made by Mother and Sri Aurobindo of starting the ashram, starting Aurobindo, where these laws were not imposed. But then the possibility of breaking out was there. So the free play of error, of self loss of self-control happens. I don't know if it still happens, but it did happen, and I think it still happens. If I can't control myself from within, I obey an external imposition of laws and say, this is what should be done, this is what should not be done. If I have evolved that own consciousness from within, I don't need to be told. I don't need to be told what should be done. I will be unhappy if I do things that are not good. It will make me personally unhappy that I feel I'm here for joy. Life is for joy. And it will make me miserable if I break that personal law. The law is mine. I am meant for a particular manifestation of joy. Each one. One aspect of joy. And I am not following it by being dragged towards this satisfaction and by that desire. I fail to be myself. My true self. That is the whole thing. Because I fail, so the group or the society or the individual or religion or tradition, all these things have built a whole set of standards. You know, in the synthesis, you have this ethical laws, standards of conduct. Only when you are spiritual, you are free. When you live in the spirit, then you have freedom. Otherwise, it is for a long time useful. But that is like all his aphorisms, you know. You have to obey certain laws, and then you break the law, because you have gone above it. So this is the world of life, the possibility of getting entangled in the world of darkness, in the world of passion, in the world of attachment. I'm a prisoner of myself. I'm attached. Attached means I'm bound. I'm bound by my desires. I'm not free. I call myself free. In what way am I free? I'm a slave. To be free is only for the one who is completely surrendered to the divine. If you are surrendered to the divine, you are not in charge of yourself. Then you are free. He's doing everything for you. That's the only. It seems a paradox, but it is not. When you are surrendered and you are offered yourself to the divine, then you are free. Until then, we are slaves. So to be absolutely sinless is wisdom. That wisdom that comes when you are in the state of oneness with the divine consciousness. Wisdom is a state. Wisdom is not knowledge. Knowledge is acquired by climbing up the, you might say, stairs from darkness to light. Wisdom is a state of freedom, of purity. There is no sin in that. There have been many wise people who are uneducated. But in him, supposing you take some stories from the life of Sri Ramakrishna, he was uneducated outwardly. He was utterly wise. His standards did not fit in his behavior. In his yoga, he took up modes of behavior which shocked people sometimes. He wanted to know the nature of how to love the divine. So he became like Radha. He became a woman for a while. He dressed like a woman. He offered his love to the divine. People were saying, "What are you doing?" But he is talking to the divine Lord as one who has surrendered her love. He has become a woman. Why not? That was a different kind of wisdom which was not understood by those who were around him. They were very, very surprised. It is sinless. It looked sinful because he was living like a woman, dressed, he was wearing a sari, he was not at all talking and singing like Radha, and not at all. Radha is the soul of the earth, the soul of the earth that is calling to the divine to manifest itself on the earth. That is who she is. There were worlds of her laughter and dreadful irony, both sides. Irony is not laughter, mockery. It is supposed to be the weapon of the devil. Irony, you mock somebody because somewhere you believe you are above that person. You are greater than that person. That's why you make fun of somebody else. There the ego becomes enormous. So there was that also. The ego, is when it is there, all the pain and the perversities are there. And laughter is an outburst of pure joy, pure happiness. There is nothing that is twisted. There were fields of her taste of toil and strife and tears. She enjoys it, the whole problem of man, as the problem of the world of life. We can't get rid of our sorrow and suffering because we don't want to. Somewhere in us there is an attraction for grief. Grief is an old friend. Life without grief, you feel, is without savor, it doesn't have a taste, it is flat. That is the problem of man. As Mother says, if you really disliked grief, you would have done something about it long ago, because we've been going through it for a long, long time. But we're holding on to it. Something in us likes it. Because we feel very, one of the most attractive experiences to feel sorry for oneself. To feel misunderstood, misliked. Nobody likes me, nobody understands me. I've shut myself up in that little shell of hard ego. So that is where I know I'm better than the others, so I can make fun of the others. If I realize that the other person is also me, the person who is suffering is also another me. All are part of the divine. The one who is suffering is also me. That is the divine universal sorrow. The divine can experience my grief because he is part of my grief. But I am not divine at that moment. I think I am above this, I am greater. So there were fields of a taste of toil and strife and tears. Her head lay on the breast of amorous death. We die because we don't want not to die. Deep down inside, this attachment to darkness, the attachment to failure, the attachment to grief, this is what keeps us down. This is why we may call it liberation. When we speak of mukti and liberation, it is not in the body. What Shankara did, what Buddha did, was leave this earthly consciousness behind and move into the infinity and eternity of the Supreme Nirvana. It is not by leaving behind, but raising up this earthly life and make it an expression of the divine. That has not been done. That attempt has not been made. This is what is special in Sri Aurobindo. Asceticism is what we do. You give up connection, attachment with the earthly life. You withdraw into your inmost being and seek the experience of the soul. And you say, I have realized the divine. Probably. But that does not change the condition of my outer being. It is not for escaping from this earthly life that we were given this earthly life. It is for transforming this earthly life, making it a medium, making it an instrument, because it is a very powerful instrument. All possibilities of manifestation are offered by life. Because of that, the problem becomes more complex. All possibilities. So we choose the more dramatic possibilities of tragedy and darkness and evil and power. They occupy more space. We don't realize the sweetness, the gentleness, the capacity to bear quietly, to realize everything is the divine. Whatever grief is going through me is also the divine. There is nothing that is not the divine. That is only in this bodily life that I can try this attempt. Sleep imitated a while, extinction peace. In a way, when we sleep, we fall back into the inconscient. Normally, you have a very peaceful sleep, you go back into a state of inconscient nothingness. The light of God, she has parted from his dusk to test the savor of bare opposites. This is the world of life, bare opposites. The supreme heights, the supreme depths. The highest sense of magnificence, the gorgeous splendor of the possibilities of the human ability, the supreme plunging into the inconscient, into the lethargy, into the absolute sleep. Here mingling in man's heart, their tones and hues have woven his being's beautiful design. His life a forward dripping stream in time, his nature's constant fixed mobility. So it's a paradox, because we're moving in the same circle all the time, the same cycle. It is mobile. There is no one second that stays fixed. It is followed by the next second. Each minute is followed by the next minute. And yet we are repeating the same sequence again and again. His soul, a moving picture's changeful film. The spirit is actually a field that manifests like a screen in a cinema. The screen is not the author of the movie. The movie is pictured on the screen. The projection that is there in the movie screen has come from elsewhere. It is showing certain images that follow. So in our being, we reflect something of that source from which all experiences are sent down to us. His cosmos, chaos of personality. This is again the whole same thing. He is a cosmos. He is the entire universe. Each man is all men. Each individual is the universe. And all of this is not organized. Life does not like organization, does not like order, does not like pattern. This comes with the mind. But each one has a personality. And these personalities also can change. Your personality as a young person is not your personality as an adult. Things have changed. Your abilities, your preferences, your consciousness, all these have rearranged themselves inside you. You are not the person you were 20 years ago. You will not be the same person 20 years from now. Why should you be? If you remain stagnant, what's the point? Okay. All this is seen by, perceived by Ashwapati. He is without judgment. He just sees the play. It's like a film. You're watching a film.